It's the Ask the Pastor Hour, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. This hour of KFUO Radio, driven by your phone calls, your questions. Our guest today, Pastor Nathan Metter. Pastor Metter at St. John's Lutheran Church in Plymouth, Wisconsin. Actually, St. John Lutheran Church, that's a distinction, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Good to have you with us today.
Good to be here.
You know, Pastor, it occurs to us that many, many marriages kind of start out this way.
Going to the chapel and we're gonna get married. Going to the chapel and we're gonna get married. Gee, I really love you.
And then sooner or later, it appears that half of them end up like this.
Now there's no welcome look, there's no eyes when I reach for you. And though you're starting to.
And there's a cover story in USA Today this morning that suggests that perhaps they never should have gotten married to begin with. Pastor Metter, you read the article today, huh?
Yes, I did. When I heard the production value is really good today, Paul.
Well thank you. Sharon Jason.
At the opening clip, I was regretting I didn't have my sequined evening gown on.
There you go. Sharon Jason writes, with this nagging doubt, Ivy wed. Apparently, according to anecdotal evidence, many people stand at the altar already knowing that their marriage is going to fail.
Yeah.
And I wanted to get your perspective because you're there with them.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and the article, it's true. I have no doubt in my mind that there are people who are doing that. And I think the it's sad. It's something that we in the church need to address. And I think the article alludes to it, but I don't know that it goes into enough detail with it. You know, one of the answers to this is some intensive premarital counseling. But you're right. And this really boils down to nothing other than messed up expectations of marriage. You know, we go into marriage thinking that, oh, I'm going to feel wonderful all the time. The earth is going to move. Every time I see you, I'm going to see stars in my eyes. And the reality is the person we marry is just as much of a sinner as we are. And when you go into one of the I know the caption on the website that I saw in the article, you know, I thought it was a fairy tale romance.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? Marriage is real. Marriage was never designed by God to be, fairy tale. Happily ever after is a creation of the devil to get you to be discontent with your spouse.
Well, apparently from the evidence that this research unveiled, people get married for some really dumb reasons.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and that's nothing new. I mean, you know, used to be, you know, Paul, even you know, I'm going to be 40 in January, and this, it was already going out of vogue when I was a kid. But, you know, when a couple of teenagers got caught playing house, you know, well, they assumed if she got pregnant, then you get married. You know, and
that's the way it worked for my parents,
oh,
and that's why I'm here.
Hey, good for them. And you know what? Did they make it?
Yeah, they did.
Good. You know, see, and this is the whole thing. You know, this is where it goes back to marital expectations. This is where, and you know, I look at kids who come into me, you know, and I can say that now, and I'm going to be 40. I look at these kids that want to get married, and you know, I start asking them. I ask them very bluntly, why? You know, why do you want to get married? And then the follow-up question is, and I usually start with the girl first. Why this guy? And I do it in that kind of tone. Why him? And the answers are quite telling. You know, when it comes to marital expectations. You know, and you, as I read the article, you know, you have some folks get married because, you know, my biological clock is ticking.
Well, let's go through the sidebar and we'll see if the listeners can identify with some of these reasons.
Sure.
For instance, did not want to be single anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Thought my partner was the best I could do. Thought I could change some aspect of my partner. Felt family pressure. Got married for financial reasons. There was an unplanned pregnancy. To escape my family. Figured I could make it work. Partner pressured me. Wanted to have children. It seemed like the next logical step. That sounds like Mr. Spock there.
Yes.
Getting married.
Yes.
And you've heard all of those.
Oh, you know, well, usually when they come to me.
Or detected them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Usually when they come to me, they've had to come up with some socially acceptable answer for one of the questions, you know, and it's, oh, it's because I love him, because he's perfect, you know, thankfully, you know, I haven't run across a guy, you know, who's, you know, hasn't been so crass to say because she's just smoking hot, you know, or anything like that.
I know, you're not going to get an honest answer from a guy. I mean, when I was 19, if I had been asked, the real answer would have been because I can't wait to get home every night to that love nest.
Yes. You know, exactly. You know, because, you know, she's a trophy, you know, because I never thought I'd ever end up with something this good looking, you know, and what happens is, see, when you start with every one of these begins, like we mentioned a couple of minutes ago, with bad expectations of marriage. You know, I can change my partner. You know, he smokes, he drinks, he's a barfly and chases women.
Mm.
You know, and I know that the minute that ring goes on his left hand, all of that is going to immediately stop. Okay, and you know, and I'll have what you're smoking. Okay, because it is an absolute unrealistic thing. You know, or you know, when you do the family pressures, I think sometimes are underestimated. You know, because especially now in our society, the studies are showing that their marriage is being delayed. You know, because, well, I have to get through college. I want to get my career started. I want this. I want, and you see, here's the problem. And there's the marital perspective problem. There's too many first-person personal pronouns.
Mm-hmm.
I want this. I want that. And what you find in the biblical understanding of marriage is that it's not about me. It really becomes primarily about my spouse. And it's only when you embrace that you really have a perspective and a marital expectation that puts you in a position where you can avoid some of these horrendous pitfalls.
Now, Pastor, you just triggered a thought. He said the biblical view of marriage. Has marriage today become all too secular?
Oh, sure. Look, before you called, I flipped down and I was looking at some of the comments. I love to do that on these internet articles, okay? Because you get to see, there may be 150 posts and there'll be three really profound answers and the rest of them will either be name calling or sheer idiocy. You know, and the sheer idiocy response is, well, I don't need a piece of paper to prove that I love someone. Why can't I just live in a house with them and behave like a family? Well, because you know what? Society has a stake in this. Society has a stake in your marriage. God has a stake in your marriage. That's why God has given the role of sanctioning marriages primarily to the state. You know, the role, understand it, you buy a marriage license from the state. The church blesses it, instructs it in the way of the Lord, but the state sanctions it because they have a vested interest. The state has a vested interest in healthy, happy marriages because that's where children come from.
It occurs to me that many marriages take place inside a church to appease the grandparents or the parents, and then the baptism's handled the same way.
Yeah. Well, you know, and there's two ways you can look at it, and I have been guilty of looking at it in any number of ways. You know, well, it's an opportunity. In fact, I just got a phone call about one of these yesterday.
Mm.
you know, they were confirmed, you know, in the beginning part of this decade, and I've seen them, you know, well, I've been here since June, haven't seen them at all. I wouldn't know, I couldn't pick them out of a lineup if, you know, if you gave me a map. And yet they want to be married in the church. And there's two ways we can look at this. And this is one of the ways we here at St. John embrace it. We say, you know what, this is an opportunity. But when you are in absent, when you're a member in absentia, meaning you're an inactive member or you know, however you want to, however your church wants to define it, then I take a much more direct premarital counseling route in saying, listen, there is, you may be in the same faith family, but you need to understand, we need to go back and look at what God says about this. You know, and are you laying the groundworks for a successful, godly marriage? Or are you embracing this because, well, you're tired of mom and dad and grandma nagging at you because you're shacked up?
Mm-hmm. And that was the case of one person who gave anecdotal evidence about these situations. Let's see, someone named Donahue, who cohabited with before her 11-year marriage, which ended 5 years ago, says she didn't heed some early signals, including religious differences.
Yeah.
Her parents also didn't approve of their living together without being married, which Donahue says encouraged her to wed. She said, I was thinking that we were in love and we were going to make it work. I believed in this whole fairy tale thing on marriage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, it goes back to expectations. The question is, you know, and really it goes back to her unwillingness to embrace the truth of the scriptures. Okay.
Yeah.
There is a reason why God has designed a man to leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two become one flesh in that order. You know, there's a reason why God, this is not some archaic thing. You know, when you have a choice, you see, our society's got this so screwed up because we want, you know, we want to fall in love and then marry. When really, if you talk to some of these successful marriages that I deal with here, you know, that have been married 60, 65 years, mm-hmm. and there's a few of those where you sit there and you find out, you know, they got married really young, but they realized that it was going to be work. You know, they didn't expect a fairy tale ending.
Well, and perhaps they had a better example of marriage as they were growing up.
Without a doubt. You know, the expectations, the parameters that we set marriage, that the society sets on marriage, it is absolutely true. Look at the way we do things today. I mean, the state has done everything it can to undercut marriage. When it comes, you know, when we invented this god-awful thing called no-fault divorce, you know, I just don't love them anymore. Okay, that's enough. Stamp. How much are you going to pay me this month? You know, and we have the state has such a vested interest in marriage, and yet it does everything to inhibit its growth. You know, whether it's providing, you know, the services it provides. You know, we spend so much money on family services. You know, and what we call family services. You know, but when you hear family services, what you're talking about, these are the kids that are neglected, rather than investing that money in healthy families, rather than investing this money in healthy families, we invested in picking up the pieces after the marriages have fallen apart.
Pastor Metter, do you think that there are cynical parents today that tell their young adult children, don't get married, just go live with him?
Yes, I've heard it, and usually these are the ones that are folks who have made multiple mistakes in marriage. They've committed multiple marital sins. You know, they decide that they can't be married anymore. You know, they get bored,
and thereby they devalue the marital relationship.
Oh, absolutely. Again, but anyone devalues marriage when it becomes about what I want to get out of it. When anyone embraces marriage or approaches marriage thinking about what am I going to get out of it? You know, am I going to, you know, I'm going to have, she's going to make me meals three times a day. She's going to do my laundry and, you know, and I'm going to get my marital satisfaction. You know, that, you know, it's about what I want. You know, anytime marriage is about what I want, you know, it's going to fail. It will fail. Because, you know, we're trying to drive a bus, we're trying to drive the bus that God has created to be loving and supportive of the other. You know, that you read that wonderful description in Ephesians chapter 5, which talks about, you know, wives, you know, this is the one, it's amazing when I get a young bride and we look at what God says. The way we've set up our premarital situation here, I've got a number of staff people that have some very, very good gifts, one in the area of music, one in the area of teaching communication skills. But we always begin and end with me in the premarital process, and we look at what God says about marriage. And when you look at Ephesians chapter 5, and it talks, wives, submit to your husbands as to the Lord. Usually at that point, the girls are sticking their fingers in their ear going, la, 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 I don't want to hear about that. Until we talk about, then, okay, I say, bear with me, go the rest of the way with me, and then you get to the point where it talks about husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church, giving himself up for her. And then that's when I look at the guy and I say, now listen, this is what you're signing up for.
I know, but you say listen and you know they're not.
Well,
I know I didn't. I just went through the motions. I played the game. This is what I got to do. I know more than him. What does he know?
Well, you know, and that's the reason why I do my premarital counseling. I don't do a lot of these Scantron sheets. That
now, do you always have the couple together or do you do them individually?
I usually do them together because we are building togetherness. Now, if I see a red flag,
uh-huh.
I have done this. You know, my radar is up. You know, I was born at night, but not last night. You know, I know that there are some guys who are going through the motions because this is her church, and you know, yeah, I give lip service to, okay, preacher, whatever you want, just get us married so we can take her on her honeymoon and have my mm-hmm. way with her. You know, but usually I have them together because we're working on things together. But if I see flags, if I say, whoa, wait a minute, then I have been known to say, you know what, maybe, you know, groom, maybe you and I ought to talk. You know, hey, can I meet you for a cup of coffee sometime? You know, and the bride, can you come in and see me tomorrow night? And let's talk about this.
What about the pressures of the marriage ceremony itself? I would tend to think that most guys want to get it over with and get on with life, but for the women, this is a big deal.
Truth be told, for more often than not, it's a big deal because their mother makes it a big deal.
Yeah.
The worst thing at weddings, and I'm going to say this, and I realize I may anger
people. You're going to get email.
Oh, yeah. Sent nathan.metter@stjohnplymouth.org. Some of the worst experiences I've ever had at a wedding is because of the mother of the bride.
Hmm.
And many of them, and this is interesting, and again, this is all anecdotal, but many of those bride, the mothers of the bride that I have the most trouble with are mothers of the bride who got married under questionable circumstances 20, 25 years before.
Oh, so they're going to live vicariously through
exactly.
this marriage.
Exactly. Those are the ones, and those are the questions I ask in that initial session. After why him, why her, you know, why marriage, why the church? Because we talk about that. I ask, why the church? Why do you want the church? Why do you want the church ceremony? But then I go, okay, tell me, and I look at each one of them, and I say, tell me, what's your birth family like? Are your birth parents married? You know? And sometimes I'll ask the question, you know, especially because by now I have them fill out an information sheet before I look at them, and I check their age, and I kind of know how long their parents have been married.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and all of a sudden, if I've got a bride or a groom in front of me that's age is very similar to the number of years their parents have been married, that tells me something. Yeah, there might have been a shotgun involved. And so then I ask the question, because those are the red flags. Because they are living vicariously. They're getting the fairy tale. They want their daughter to have the fairy tale wedding that they never had. So what they do is they try to make it such a production
mm-hmm.
that it's big enough for two of them. Because it has to be. It has to be the girl and the mom. More often than not, by the time you get to the process, you get at the beginning of the process and you want the whole nine yards. You want the harpist, the string quartet, and you want the biggest, most classy wedding hall. You want the Chase Park Plaza or whatever. And by the time you get to like a week or 10 days before the ceremony, both of them are going, what on earth have we gotten ourselves into? Why didn't we just go to the parsonage and get married? Like their grandparents did. It's really funny. I ask the question sometimes, where'd your grandparents get married? The foyer of the parsonage.
Uh-huh.
They didn't even get married in the church. This whole church ceremony thing is a 1950s, 1960s thing. You go vast majority, you go through the parish record, in the vast majority of these Lutheran churches, especially the ones in, you know, where the parsonage is right next door, the vast majority of these are boys going off to war. These are boys going off to war. They marry their sweetheart before they leave or right after they get back. And it's usually just a couple of people. That's it. And those are the ones that last 60 years.
Hmm. Do the young adult men or women, express more possessiveness about the other? Do you think guys tend to be more possessive than gals? You brought that up by saying he gets married before he goes off to war. It seems like he wants to nail this thing down.
Well, you know, I think some of that was, and believe it or not, I've had a couple of those type of weddings in the last few years. When we get young men who, you know, it seems to be Marines. You know, something about the Marines. You know, these guys know, you go in the Marines nowadays, you're going to go see combat. You will very likely see combat. And these guys get very serious very fast. And a lot of times, they want to know that there's somebody they're going to come home to. Somebody that they need to live for. And the guys get possessive of the idea of marriage as much as they get possessive of their wife.
The idea.
Yeah, the idea that this is my family. I am defending my family, and I'm going to and I need to protect my life so that I can come home to my wife. And
you're suggesting that it's a coming of age thing.
Oh, especially for those guys, you know, and understand this. I have, you know, there are no human beings on earth like United States Marines. I have undying respect for them, and these are guys. It could be coming of age. But I also think it's that there's a maturity factor. You know, when you're realizing that you're going off to fight and maybe die, all of a sudden the dross of life is melted away very quickly, and you realize that this is an important thing. Now, that being said, when you talk to military chaplains, one of the biggest problems that they have when these guys come home is the husband has seen things and it's made them different. The babies have grown up while they're gone, and the number one problem in our military lives are marital problems. You know, they were married young, they're living in, you know, especially if they're living on base or near base, they're living on next to nothing. You know,
and the base is a subculture of its own.
Oh, sure. You know, and you have you have situations where you have husbands deployed, and the wives get lonely, you know, and there are all kinds of pressures and stresses that I don't think rank and file, I don't think the normal civilian understands. I know I don't completely understand it. I try to when I talk to my guys who are in the service.
Now, have you ever had a couple that you actually said you two should not get married?
No.
That's difficult to do.
Well, you know, it is. It's very difficult to do. They also, you know, I've had couples where I have required them to do much more extensive premarital counseling. I've had a couple of couples that I said, okay, I will marry you on this condition, that you will meet with me monthly in the first year of your marriage.
When we come back, phones are open, by the way, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I don't want to dominate this with my questions, but when we come back, I'd like to know how you handle a couple who are cohabitating. They're living together. They're not married. They want to get married. And what do you do about that? And then also, let's help the parents here who might have an inkling that marriage isn't going to work out. I remember when my daughter was engaged and we went to the caterer's food tasting and things. We just, afterwards, we looked at each other, my wife and I, and said, I don't know about this, if this is going to work out or not. Well, fortunately, our daughter broke it off. She had her doubts and went with her gut. But what advice would you have for parents? How would they handle that? How can they handle that effectively without alienating their son or daughter? We'll answer those questions and yours when we come back on Ask the Pastor with Nathan Metter from St. John Lutheran Church, Plymouth, Wisconsin, on KFUO Radio. KFUO Radio and the National Lutheran Choir have a Christmas treat for you. Listen for the jingle bells. That'll be your cue to call and register for a package that includes a National Lutheran Choir CD, $50 certificate for Squire's Restaurant, and 4 tickets for the National Lutheran Choir Christmas Concert on the evening of December 19th at Christ Church Cathedral. We'll draw the winner Thursday, December 17th. So listen for the bells and register as often as you like on KFUO Radio.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Right before President Obama left on his trip to China, an important hearing took place on Capitol Hill. Pro-life Congressman Chris Smith heard testimony from people who've been victimized by China's many human rights violations. One of them was the attorney of a Chinese opponent to their cruel forced abortion policy. The hearing got lots of media attention, so China was quick to retaliate. Shortly after Mr. Obama left China, Chinese government officials beat this attorney's wife and then hauled him off to a jail. A clear message to those who dare to speak out against the government. Mr. Obama gave $50 million to a UN organization that helps fund forced abortions in China. Why isn't our president standing up to this grave injustice against millions of Chinese people?
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
She sees. I'm Steve Coleman with today's Religion Roundup. Actress Sandra Bullock says meeting Leanne Toohey, who she portrays in The Blind Side, showed her there really are some Christians who walk the walk.
She was so open and honest and forthright, and I said, wow, I finally met someone who practices but doesn't preach.
The film presents the true story of the Toohey's, a white family in Tennessee who take a homeless black youth in off the street and then adopt him as their son. That young man now plays for the National Football League's Baltimore Ravens. The real Leanne Toohey says that when she started attending his games this season,
I had to have a little come to Jesus talk with my section at Raven Stadium. I had to explain to everyone that, okay, we're going to have a change of attitude. There is a 2-drink limit. There is no cussing in this. You don't know who you're sitting next to. This could be, I'm a player's mom.
Toohey says she hopes The Blind Side inspires more people to help others. I'm Steve Coleman.
Underwriting support on KFUO Radio provided by Reliable Heating and Cooling, a Christian family that understands the value of helping to bring you God's Word on the radio. The folks at Reliable also know how important it is to have your furnace checked before winter. An inefficient or malfunctioning heat exchanger can compromise the integrity of your furnace system. A preseason inspection from Reliable is convenient, affordable, and gives you peace of mind. Reliable Heating and Cooling, supporting what you hear on KFUO Radio.
The Dominican Republic works to protect the unborn.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Legislators in the Dominican Republic have amended the country's constitution to protect unborn babies. Despite some international pressure from pro-abortion groups such as the United Nations and Amnesty International, the National Assembly voted by a large margin to change the Constitution to read, "The right to life is inviolable from conception until death." When the language is officially adopted, the Dominican Republic will join Chile, Guatemala, and Paraguay as Latin American countries who offer unborn children the same rights as other citizens. The constitutional right to life.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
We're just midway through Ask the Pastor on the Bible study. Paul Clayton here, sitting in for vacationing Chuck Rathard. Our guest tomorrow, Dr. Peter Kurowski, from St. Paul Lutheran Church in California, Missouri, on Ask the Pastor. Our guest today, Pastor Nathan Metter of St. John Lutheran Church, Plymouth, Wisconsin. When we went to the break, I gave you the scenario, a personal slice of life. How can parents prepare their kids for what might be unusual expectations and maybe that they're making a mistake and dissuade them or maybe have them postpone that marriage?
Well, first and foremost, it becomes, be realistic in your own marriage. Show them, that real, loving Christian parents disagree. I meet so many families that want to hide and shelter their children discontent that canon does exist in Christian marriages, because you're going to have discontent in marriages because you have a husband and a wife who happen to have one very important thing in common. They're sinful. Okay? The marital expectation education begins when they're very young. You know, you debunk the idea that marriage is a fairy tale. Okay, so you understand that the other person does have faults and foibles, that you're going to have to, A, learn to forgive over and over. Lord, how many times must I forgive my brother who sins against me? Well, it's just the same as true. How many times do I need to forgive my spouse who sins against me? Seven times? No, not seven times, 70 times seven. You know, those kind of things. The other thing is, you need to have conversations with your kids. You know, when they start dating, you have the conversations when they're dating. What do you see in this guy? I remember a conversation I had with my Grandpa Deeples. There was a time when I was interested in a young lady of Roman Catholic persuasion. I was, and now you got to understand, I've been on a track for the parish ministry for since I was 14. Okay. And I remember Grandpa saying something to me like, why would you do that? You can't marry her. Because, you know, at the time, this young lady that I was quite a little interested in was quite Roman Catholic, and of course I was quite Lutheran. And there's an issue there. You know, there is an issue and that I deal with in my family, unifying the spiritual house. You know, because what you end up with at times, you know, when Daddy has his church and Mommy has her church, the children usually end up having no church. Because nobody likes going to church by themselves. Mm. You know, and so I really do. You know, you talk to your kids about the necessity of unifying your spiritual house.
You know, in our situation, they were high school sweethearts, and we came to really love this guy. He was terrific, but they seemed more like brother and sister.
Yeah.
And we were concerned about that, and yet reticent to talk about it with her because you don't want to curse the relationship. You don't know.
Well, and
you don't, you know, it's like you don't want to mess things up.
Well, you can't, there's nothing wrong. Here's the deal. If it's a real relationship and God's destined them to be together, they're going to be together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but this is one of the things, too. And this is, I think this is a parenting issue. So often when the children, I heard it said this way, you know, be a mean parent the first 18 years of their life. You have an entire lifetime to be their friend. Because after they turn 18, they realize how smart you are anyway. You know, and you know, I have this theory, and I've talked about this on other shows. You know, I think parents' IQs descend to absolute zero the closer that their children get to 18. You know, so, you know, by the time your child is 18, they look at you and they think you're a blithering idiot taking up resources, important resources like air and space. But what happens is then after that, then they start doing other things, you know, like getting, you know, seriously dating, going off to college, seriously dating, getting engaged, getting married, and having children. You know, and I think it's important for us when they're young and when they're in these premarital stages to be very direct, you know, to be tactful, you know, you don't want to say, you know, what do you see in this jerk, you know, but you may have to ask the question, you know, especially if you can see, you know how to read your children. You know, you spend enough time with them, you know how to read your children, and you watch them interact with their intended or the one that they're interested in. And if you see red flags, like this guy's, you know, this guy's treating your daughter like the welcome man in front of the house, you know, you better ask that question. Because that, again, just like we said, you know, because she may be laboring under that false idea that all I have to do is love him and show him how wonderful our house is going to be and he's going to change. Guess what? He's probably not.
It's certainly an emotionally charged time for everyone involved.
Yeah.
Parents and children. And then the pastor, and there you are. Mm-hmm. And how do you handle a situation? More and more young people today are living together before they get married.
Yeah.
Have you had situations like that where they walk into your office and say, well, we've been living together for 2 years and now we're ready to tie the knot?
Let me show you how much it's changed in 13 and a half years. In 13 and a half years, you know, 13 and a half years ago when a couple came in to me to get married and they were living together, they would not fill out that section on the questionnaire.
Hmm.
I would not see their address. They would not want the question even raised. Now it's become so brazen that they fill it out. And they basically say, what are you going to do about it? Okay? it's getting to the point where, you know, when I first started, it was rare that you'd have a couple that would be that honest with their living together. Now, I had one wedding earlier this fall where I wanted to take their picture because I knew that they were not living together, they were not going to live together, and they were not sexually active. I was like, can I take a, you guys are a museum piece, can I take a picture of you? Now, the million-dollar question, what do we do with these couples who are seeking marriage? I know brother pastors who will take a very hard line and say, nine nicks for both, never. And I think that is a position that they are taking from an informed position they're taking from the scripture. I think, however, in my place, I want to use this as an opportunity to open dialogue. Okay, it's amazing how easy it is for me to get the couple to understand that this is not the way God intends it. You know, this is not the way God intends it. And if something isn't changed in this setting, you are asking the church to sanction a relationship that God calls sinful.
Meanwhile, are you asking them to repent and ask for forgiveness?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The wedding date does not go on our church calendar until I see a sense of contrition and repentance on the couple's part. It's amazing too how it's workable. It's workable. You know, so many pastors give up, and they, you know, there is. I think you can be too rigid. A pastor can be too rigid and saying, "Never, you've lived together, I can't marry you." I don't think that's defensible in Scripture. I don't think that's a defensible position. But it's it's a lazy pastor's way out of not doing weddings. Because let me tell you something. As a pastor, there are a few things that I would want to avoid more than a wedding. Weddings are just not fun for pastors. They're not. So
would you rather preside over a funeral than a wedding?
In a heartbeat. I don't mean to be crass, but there's when you're at a funeral, there are very few people there, if any, who are there for wrong reasons. You know, the box up in front with the loved one in it kind of focuses your attention. But when you go to a wedding, you know, there are people there who understand what Christian marriage is, and God bless them. But there are other people who are thinking that this is a time, you know, this is just a societal rite of passage. Isn't this sweet and quaint, a throwback to the good old days? And then you got some others who are just out and out jerks. I had one wedding when I was up in Wausau where there was a guest who, just before I asked him the question, you know, we had done the declaration of intent. You know, do you so-and-so take this woman to be your wedded wife, to have and to hold in sickness and health, yeah, until death? You know, I get to that point. And right as I was about to do the vows, the guy yelled out, "It's not too late."
Mm.
And, of course, then I shot the disapproving pastoral eye daggers at him. And he shrunk. If there had been a hole in the floor, he crawled into it. But, you know, you see, at a wedding, you don't have... At a wedding, there's has so many. You're just across the board, which is one of the reasons why I'm very big on making sure that the wedding is for the couple, not the parents, not the people in attendance.
Have you presided over a wedding where it dissolved at the altar?
No, I've never done that. Hmm. And I honestly believe if we do our job as pastors, and parents do their job as parents, I've had marriages that have been called off. But never, I've never had anybody left standing at the altar.
Mm.
That's just, again, that's bad pastoral practice. That's bad pastoral care.
But the article we referred to, our backdrop for this program today, suggests that there's people standing there in front of you that have their doubts and think they're making a big mistake, and they're afraid to not get married because of all these external pressures from parents, partner, or others, or misguided motivations, or personal beliefs. Are thinking they won't find anyone else.
Yeah, when you get to the altar, you know, by the time you get to the week of the wedding, you've got to have some chutzpah to bail out, because there's a lot of money that's been spent that you just can't get back.
Oh, I know about that.
You know, there's money. Yeah, there's money that's been spent that you're just not getting back.
Yeah.
You know, and I think there are people who go through with it just because they realize, you know, oh my gosh, I've got this much spent invested in it, I may as well just make it work, which is stupid. Because, you know, all that's going to do is make a lawyer rich, you know, because the lawyer is going to get his chunk. You know, There is a every couple has those feelings of, oh my, this is a major step. And you know what, if you don't have, you know, the cold feet scenario, if you don't have cold feet before you get married, you have unrealistic marriage expectations. Because you have no understanding on what a magnitude, you know, what magnitude of decision you're about to make and magnitude of commitment you're about to make. You know, it's like when you have kids. You know, the whole concept is wonderful till all of a sudden, you know, you realize, you know, the baby's delivered and everything's, you've called all the grandparents for the first time and you're driving home from Rusk County Memorial Hospital back to the parsonage in Sheldon and you go, and you all of a sudden hit by this runaway freight train. Oh Lord, now I have to raise this thing. You know, and there's, you know, you need to have some of this sense of perspective that this is a major thing. Now, but you also have to honor the fact that those questions, that while they may be natural, there may be red flags, and you need to honor those.
Now, Pastor, you talked about the premarital counseling that you conduct with
sure.
couples. Is there any follow-up 6 months, a year later, or should there be?
You know, I think there is. One of the things that we do here at St. John is we have a very active, we have three couples who are very active in our marriage ministry. And we host marriage retreat weekends. We own a retreat center out in the Kettle Moraine State Forest, just 6-7 miles west of town here, and we bring 8 to 10 couples in, and we do intensive marriage weekends. And I encourage my couples to get into those in the first couple of years, because this is another stigma that we have. We think marriage counseling is for marriages that are about to fail. And really, it's not. You know, going to marriage counseling is not an admission that your marriage is, you know, is 8 seconds away from divorce. Going to marriage counseling is an admission that, hey, you know what? I'm a sinner. She's a sinner. We need to find ways to work through this.
Mm.
It's not a sign of weakness. It's actually a sign of strength, because I don't have all the answers. You know, and my wife will tell you that. I don't have all the answers. You know, when I talk to people about my wife, about my marriage has not been perfect. We've been married 17 and a half years. We have our issues, but I will tell you this, and that this is not false humility in any way, shape, or form. I am the president of the organization of men who married far better than they deserve.
Yeah.
And that is a biblical understanding. When you have a wife, when a man has a wife that drives him bananas at times, you know, has traits that at times make me want to scratch my eyes out. But not out of desperation, but out of sheer blessing, I cling to her. You know, part of it is, you know, it's who God made her to be. God has made me for her and her for me. And I think we've learned that. We were married, by today's standard, we were married very young. Jill and I got married when we were 22. I think there's another thing. I think what we're doing is this delayed marriage is
good,
one of the worst things
bad.
We can do.
Bad? Yeah. The sociologists think it's a good thing.
No, it's terrible. Delayed marriage is terrible. Delayed marriage is a terrible thing.
Get your education, get your career started, live
me,
by yourself for a
me,
while, then
me,
get married.
Me, me, me.
Ah.
Me, 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 me. This is not the way it's intended. There is a reason why. There's a reason why God has designed couples to come together. You know, if you're going to date, you see, here's the problem. We delay marriage, but we encourage early dating.
Hmm.
That's a topic for another thing. You know, the sooner they date, the sooner they mate. You know, the statistics show that cohabitation does not help marriage. Marriages that begin with more than 6 months cohabitation have a failure rate that is astronomical. I mean, you talk, even, you know, the society in which we live right now, marriage is, you know, 50-50. You know, statistically, 50-50. 50 are going to, you know, half of them are going to make it, half of them aren't. But when a couple comes into me and they're cohabitating and they reach, you know, they reach the point of contrition and repentance, and now I look at them and I said, here is one of the reasons, the first reason that I want you to fix this, that you need to fix this, is because this isn't God-pleasing. The second reason is it's going to make your marriage that much harder, because your marital expectations, your living arrangements, your order in the household is all established the first year you're married, the first year you're together. And what happens is these couples who live together for longer than 6 months before they get married, oftentimes 2, 3, 4 years, they're set in their roles. But in the roles, there is always the sense, there's always that little question mark in the back of their head that tells, you know, I'm still in a position right now that if I don't like this, I can leave.
Pastor Metter, do you think that the secularization of marriage, the institution of marriage in this country, has led to the cohabitating? I mean, if it's secular, I mean, why even bother with the paperwork?
Well, again, it's a failure. I think it's a failure of parents. It's a failure of the church. The biggest thing, again, this the no-fault divorce. You know, no-fault divorces. Divorces destroy children. Divorces destroy children. We think they're malleable and they can bounce back. They're not. And I am saying this as a child of divorce. My parents were divorced when I was 6. Okay? God has used that divorce for very good things because it set me on the path to be where I'm at right now. But I will tell you that that the day my dad left is one of the worst days of my life ever. And if anybody is so selfish to think that they can get a divorce and have it not affect their children, they're insane.
You know what they tell themselves. Kids are resilient. They'll bounce back.
Well, you know what? They're liars. You know, that's the devil talking. That is no different than you're not going to die in the garden. No, you, hey, Eve, you're not. God knows you're not going to die. Everything's going to be great. That is the devil's lie. That is the devil's lie to destroy another generation who in turn are more likely to divorce because they don't have a realistic understanding of marriage. Because all they remember from their parents' marriage is that crushing emotional devastation that was forced on them by their parents. And so therefore they either A, become much more picky and have unrealistic, they're looking to marry Prince Charming, you know, and there aren't any out there, dear. There aren't any out there. Or they become permissive. They just want the first person that comes along because I'm afraid. You know, and then what happens is you end up staying in, they start with bad expectations, and then they end up staying in marriages because they don't want to do to their kids what happened to them, and they just accept it. They don't work on their marriage. There is no marriage that is not salvageable. Every marriage is salvageable as long as both participants are willing to work at saving it.
Given the state of the culture today, is one of your biggest challenges helping that couple understand that the relationship is a cord of three strands?
Oh, yeah. You know.
I remember that being said to me.
Sure.
But I don't think it sunk in right away.
Well, it's like anything else. You know, it spiritual maturity, emotional maturity, physical maturity, marital maturity, they all come with age. You know, the people who have some of the people who have the problem is, you know, we are too soon old and too late smart. You know, wisdom is wasted on the old people. You know, and I don't mean that as disrespectful, but we learn so much too late. You know, and this is one of the reasons why it becomes important for parents and grandparents to teach their children and their grandchildren what biblical marriage is about. We need to uphold those images, these people. That's one of the big reasons why when I have a couple celebrating one of these gigantic milestones, Elaine and George Scharnberger just celebrated one this weekend in church, I make a big deal out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, not because it's a dinosaur or throwback or rarity, but to these kids out there who are thinking about getting married or they're just married and they're dealing with some of the hassles. You know, I point out, hey, George and Elaine, you've dealt with all these.
And you know all too well that there aren't models like that in life for many people. You didn't have that.
Oh, no. You know, it's one of the things I sit there, I am jealous of. I love my mother dearly. I love my mother dearly. You know, she did the best she could. And then you have all kinds of the issues with steps and those, mm-hmm. those just create all kinds of other issues. My wife's mom and dad, you know, were married all the way up till the day Ken died. And you saw, for better or for worse, Jill has a, and that, maybe that's why I'm married to a woman that I don't deserve, because she had parents who taught her what marriage is about. And, you know, if there's anything, you know, if somebody listening right now has a marriage that's struggling, get help. Be visible with your kids that you're getting help, because that will help them later. Because, when, you know, they don't have to labor under the lie that they have to make their marriage work by themselves. They got to pull up their bootstraps and get it done. You know, if you're sick, if you're physically ill, you go see a doctor. You know, if you have mental illness, you go to a doctor. If you have relational illness, and we do have relational illness, you go get professional help. You go talk to your pastor about biblical marriage roles. You go get into a situation where you learn how to communicate with one another. And there's a great thing. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. There's one. I ran into it up here. It's called Laugh Your Way to a Better Marriage. You ever heard of that?
We've had the author on the air here.
Oh,
absolutely.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's a good thing. It puts it in perspective. It debunks a lot of myths, you know, about what marriage is and marital expectations. Teach your children and your grandchildren realistic marriage expectations. And if you don't have them, if you're married and you don't have them, get into counseling and get them.
Unemployment, salary cuts, a stagnant housing market have apparently combined to make divorce financially impossible for many couples. Could this be an opportunity in disguise, Pastor?
Has to be. Has to be. Again, like I said, any marriage can be saved as long as two people are willing to work at it. And if they're both willing to work at it because they can't afford any other option, then so be it. You know, we can look at it as at times. You know, it's amazing. You know, it's amazing how society has so messed marriage up. It used to be, well, we got to wait to get married till we can afford it. Now they got to wait till they can wait to get a divorce till they can afford it. We as the church need to seize this time, you know, and saying and be upfront with what marriage is. Be upfront. You know, preach about it, teach about it. You know, we devote, we have an active marriage ministry. Churches need to have that. You know, get some couples, you know, and it doesn't have to be the pastor. Get some sanctified, you know, couples who have been with Jesus. You know, and every congregation's got at least one or two of them. You know, couples who have been with Jesus who will be willing and able to take younger couples and mentor them. I know congregations that do that. You know, you get a new marriage couple and you get a premarital couple, and one of the things that the pastor will do is, in some congregations, we don't do this here yet, but where you get them with a more mature couple who's been farther down the road, and you get them together as mentors so that they have someone they can go to so they don't feel like they're burdening mom and dad with it, especially if you've got a couple that doesn't have family in a given area.
Is it fairly obvious to the pastor looking out from the pulpit into the pews whose marriage needs work?
No, that's...
You never know, huh?
Oh, you never know. You never know. I'm dealing with one right now that 6 months ago, when I first got here, you just swore they were Ken and Barbie. Uh-huh. Or they were Ozzy and, mm-hmm. you know, Ward and June, you know. And then all of a sudden I get a phone call. He's moved out. He's been having an affair for 3 months.
Oh, goodness.
You know, and it's like, excuse me? You know, yeah, you cannot, just like you can look at, you know, you can look at somebody, you know, somebody you walk past today or you see it, Johnny's, you know, that looks absolutely fine and their body's full of cancer and they don't even know it.
Well, that happened just a week ago.
Yeah, you can have that. Mm. Pray for marriage. Encourage your pastor to pray for marriage. Demand your congregation to do real marriage ministry. That's
right.
The answer to this.
Pastor Nathan Metter, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, my friend.
Ask the Pastor. Tomorrow, Dr. Peter Kurowski.
Listen to Chuck Ratherton guests Monday through Friday at this same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the internet at kfuo.org. For a free copy of the Bible Study, please visit the audio archive section of our homepage. That's kfuo.org. The Bible Study is a broadcast service of Worldwide KFUO.